Chapter 3 Drake took a drag from his low holder as he followed Grek into Precipice's forest of cooling ducts, heat shields, cargo bays and bulkheads. It was an ugly scene. Hundreds of ships and docking stations, stacked precariously and threaded with rivers of smog, smouldering slowly in the blood glow of the drone plots. Precipice was divided into four loosely defined districts. Flotsam in the north, Lagan in the east, Jetsam in the south, and Derelict to the west, with drone plots as a central hub, the only route from one district to another. The whole sweltering mess bristled with hundreds of embarkation points locked to the three main mooring spars, Ilium Gate, Selsum Gate, and Orbis Gate, and hunched menacingly beneath the spherical void screen was the buttress of a long-forgotten frigate, laden with weapons batteries and lance turrets, some of which were allegedly still operational. What began as a simple trading post had become a township of sorts, a gaudy powder keg fueled by the hot, sluggish air trapped beneath the void screen. Even to a seasoned traveller like Drake, it was an unusual sight, but he was not really looking at it. All he could picture was his father's face when he heard that his errant son had mastered a Blackstone fortress. What would the Duke say then? Most of Precipice's mooring spars radiated from the central axis like outstretched arms grasping helplessly at the void. But the Orbis Gate circled the whole eastern quarter of the station, the region known as Lagan. It was a crooked sphere of gantries and anchorage points. Blinking landing lights dragged it in and out of view, and clouds of landers and shuttles whirled around its ports, giving the Orbis Gate the appearance of an angry wasp's nest, swarming with desperate industry. Grek led Drake and Isler along one of the broader walkways, towards a hulking bulldog of a ship. It was hunched at the end of a mooring point, as dented and buckled as every other ship that battled its way through Precipice's junkyard corona. There was a guard standing on either side of the landing ramp, and they looked like human manifestations of the shuttle they were tasked with protecting, scowling, ogreish brutes, gripping battered las carbines. As Grek led Drake and Isola up towards the hatch, they all heard the sound of banging coming from inside the ship, along with muffled curses and shouts. Drake was about to speak when Grek strode in front of him and addressed one of the guards.
"We need Grusal Bolosas."
The guard's face was blank. Drake nodded his head in a slight bow.
"Let me introduce myself. Captain Drake of House Drake. I have business here with a pilot called Ordus."
The guard's expression remained the same. Drake enunciated his next words with care.
"There is a pilot called Ordus on this ship. I need to speak to her."
The guard finally glanced at Drake. Then he turned away and spoke into a comms link beside the hatch.
"Grusel, someone's here. Says he's Captain Drake. He's asking after someone called Ordus."
There was a moment's pause, then the vox crackled into life.
"Drake."
There was another pause, then the voice came again, breathy with avarice.
"The Terran. Wait."
A few minutes later, the hatch whooshed open to reveal what looked like an explosion in an arms factory. There were weapons everywhere, locked to the walls, stacked in heaps, hanging in crates from the ceiling and scattered across the deck. It was a fantastic collection. Some were weapons Drake could recognise, but many were clearly of alien manufacture. Standing in the midst of all this weaponry, leaning on the doorframe as he tried to catch his breath, was a pale, blubbery heap of a man. He was topless, and his grey folds of flab were glistening with sweat. His head looked like an egg, pale and hairless, nestling in a ruff of double chins, and his face appeared oddly shrunken, cowering in the middle of his jowly head. He had the wide-eyed look of the perpetually baffled. At the sight of Drake, the man stood upright, carrying his weight easily on a huge frame. Drake guessed he must be nearly 7 foot tall. There was oil splashed across his pallid chest, and he was clutching what looked like a piece of construction equipment, a rivet gun or a steam hammer. There was blood dripping from the casing. He stared at Drake, slack-jawed, taking in the well-tailored uniform and gold braiding.
Yeah?
His voice was breathy and hoarse, little more than a whisper, but he was gripping the rivet gun like he was about to crush it.
Grusel bullosis? Said Drake.
Yes.
I need a few moments alone with your guest, a pilot by the name of Ordus.
No, said Greg. Not just talking. You need her.
Drake silenced him with a glare. Bullosis stared at Drake. He still seemed unable to close his mouth, but he saw what Drake was carrying.
Proctor credits.
Drake nodded. The landing ramp juddered as Bullosis stomped out onto it.
How many?
Drake flashed him an impressive spread of tokens. Bullosis stared.
How many?
The bounty hunter was not quite as dim as he appeared. Drake doubled the number of tokens. Bullosis stared at them for a few seconds longer, silently mouthing numbers as he counted. Then he nodded.
2 minutes.
He turned and thudded back into the ship, waving them on board with his blood-splattered gun. They passed mounds of ammo cases and piles of firearms in the companionway before climbing down a stairwell into the hold. They paused at a door as Bullosis entered a security code. His fingers rattled quickly over dozens of digits, but Drake's augmetic eye recorded the code just in case it was needed later. As they stood at the door, Drake heard singing coming from the other side, a haunting melody, completely incongruous with the ship's brutal-looking interior. The blast door whooshed aside, and they entered the hold. The room was a long, low-ceilinged rectangle, lined with rows of thick, reinforced doors, all bolted shut. It was harshly lit, and the walls were splattered with blood, giving the place the appearance of a slaughterhouse. There were more weapons scattered across a workbench, along with shackles and restraining harnesses. In the centre of the room, two guards were packing crates, las carbines slung over their backs. In the corner of the room, there was a mound of Xenos body parts, heads mostly, presumably taken from the Blackstone as hunting trophies that could be sold to nobles too lazy or cowardly to kill their own. The Blackstone was infested with all manner of strange beasts, and Drake could only recognise one of the specimens Bullosis had collected. It looked like the head of an enormous insect, with huge, lethal-looking mandibles and a thick, pitted carapace. As he studied it, Drake recalled the name, Amble, from the xenology text he'd pored over as a child. Perched on top of this strange menagerie was a spherical cage, and in the cage was a living creature, a strange-looking amphibian. Drake hesitated, taken aback by the peculiar nature of the thing. It looked like a bloated, leathery toad, but it had a small, perfectly human face. This grotesque animal was the source of the music. Its face was earnest with concentration as it sang, and the music was eerily beautiful, more like a choir than a single voice. The two guards stood up at the sound of the opening door and grabbed their guns, pointing them at Drake and the others. Bullosis ignored them and led Drake to a doorway at the far end of the room. As he walked past the other doors, Drake heard the sound of muffled cries and banging. Bullosis tapped in another security code, again recorded discreetly by Drake, and the door dropped into the floor, revealing the cell behind. It was little more than a box, barely big enough to hold the woman chained inside. Ordus was cuffed to the wall, slumped against her restraints, her head hanging down against her chest. She was wearing a bulky Imperial Navy flight suit, but even without it, she would have been almost as large as Bullosis, not fat like he was, but broad and powerfully built. Drake could imagine how hard Bullosis must have had to work to take her down.
Is she dead? Asked Drake.
Bullosis shook his head. He still had the same slack-jawed expression on his face, but there was a trace of excitement in his voice as he replied,
I'm not letting this one die. Too valuable.
He grabbed her by the throat and pushed her back. As Ordis's head lolled to the side, Drake saw a gunshot wound in the chest pocket of her flight suit. He frowned at Belosus. Belosus shook his head.
I tag 'em. That's all.
Before Drake could protest, Belosus slapped her hard across the face. Ordis was covered in bruises and lesions, but she stirred, muttering gibberish as she stood up. She had strong, classical features, and her eyes were cool and steady, locking on Belosus with no trace of fear. She strained against her bonds, but could only move her hands a few inches from the filthy wall. Then she noticed Drake and the others watching from the door, and frowned. She tried to speak, but her mouth was full of something. She spat a dark gobbet of blood on the floor and glared at Drake, her eyes burning. I hope I'm worth the money. Belosus stepped out of the cell so Drake could see Ordis more clearly.
He just wants to talk to you. Greg?
Ordis's eyes widened as she saw the croot.
You're alive!
Greg nodded, but gave no other sign he knew her, busy looking with interest at a gun mounted on the wall. It was a rifle with long scythe-like blades strapped to the stock and barrel. It had been left unsecured. Drake gave the croot a warning glance.
Talk, said Ordis, turning her glare at Drake. You better be quick. Fat boy has plans for me. I'm valuable, believe it or not.
Drake nodded.
I can be brief. I need passage through the dragon's teeth. This croot tells me...
Hey!
Cried Belosus, as Greg grabbed the rifle and slammed it butt first into the bounty hunter's face. Things moved fast after that. Belosus crashed to the floor, dropping his gun, and before he could rise, Greg turned and fired at Ordis, filling the room with noise and light. Drake cursed. Isola had been right. He should never have trusted the alien. He whipped his splinter pistol out and pointed it at Greg. The wall behind them exploded into shrapnel as the guards opened fire. Drake dropped into a crouch and returned fire, sending a guard flipping back through the air, clutching a hole in his throat. Isola took the other one down with her lasgun, and there was a brief pause as Drake, Isola and Greg looked at each other through the gun smoke, clutching their weapons. The amphibian in the cage stopped singing to stare at them. Ordis leapt from her cell, launching herself at Belosus, who had just climbed to his feet. Her weight bowled him over, and they rolled across the floor, laying wild punches on each other as they smashed through the table and scattered weapons. The manacles at Ordis's wrists were smouldering, and Drake realized his mistake. Greg had not shot her. He had blasted her restraints off.
You can't get past the teeth without her, explained Greg as Drake pointed his pistol at him.
Footsteps clattered overhead.
More guards, said Isola, training her gun on the open door. Now we'll have to explain all this to the proctors.
Belosus can't go to the proctors,
said Greg, waving at the guns.
This is all stolen from Precipice. So are his captives.
Drake held up his splinter pistol.
I can use low-grade toxins. Let me do the...
More shots filled the air as the two other guards stormed into the room, guns barking. Drake ducked into the cell to dodge the blasts. When he emerged, the guards were dead, holes smouldering in their jackets where Greg had shot them.
No more killing,
he cried, as Ordis punched Belosus to the floor and reached for one of the guns hanging on the wall. She ignored him, but Isola was close enough to smash the weapon from her grip and send it flying across the room. Ordis howled, lifted the metal workbench off the floor, and smashed it over Belosus's head. Belosus crumpled and lay still, blood rushing from his ears and nose. Drake strode across the room, grabbed Ordis and threw her through the doorway onto the stairs. She bounced back onto her feet, but came face to muzzle with Drake's pistol.
Let me kill him,
she said quietly, her eyes straining. Drake said nothing, keeping the gun pointing at her. Ordis cursed and dived at him, giving Drake no option. He fired, sending her crashing to the floor with a splinter in her chest. Finally, there was quiet. Ordis was sprawled at the bottom of the steps, and Belosus and his crew were lying in a fast-growing lake of blood. The caged singer was still silent, staring at the mess.
"Time to go," said Grek,
lifting Ordus onto his shoulder with surprising ease. Drake looked at the other cell doors, cursing his better instincts.
"We can't leave them to starve, whatever they are."
Isida dropped to one knee and put a hand on Belosus's neck. "He's alive," she said. "Someone will have heard all those gunshots, and when they arrive, they'll be keen to know how Belosus came by his cargo. No one will starve." Drake nodded, then glared at Grek.
"I never ordered you to start freeing people."
"Ordered?"
Grek shook his head.
"I am not a servant."
He sounded confused rather than angry. Drake felt like silencing the Kroot in the same way he had silenced the pilot, but he waved him back up the steps.
"We'll talk on the Vanguard."
The Vanguard loomed over Precipice with a disdainful air, like a noble bird of prey perched at the centre of a stinking scrapyard, far too proud and elegant for such ill-favoured surroundings. Like everything in the Drake fleet, it was sleek, lethal, and gilded with Terran heraldry. It looked like a smaller, leaner cousin of an Imperial warship, with a long, graceful prow and hulking Aradis-class plasma engines. It was only a shuttle. Drake had been forced to abandon his void ship, the Drakestar, on the far side of the debris cloud, but it was still a far more impressive sight than most of the vessels moored to Precipice. It was heavily armed, and large enough to carry hundreds of servitors, crewmen and attachés. Usually Drake would feel a sense of relief as he returned to this bastion of civilization, but as they carried Ordus up the landing ramp, he was cursing under his breath.
"She's dying," he muttered,
glancing at Isla in consternation.
"I can't understand it."
He'd expected Ordus to be coming round by now, but as they rushed her into the Vanguard's commerce lounge, her heart rate was slowing at an alarming rate. He placed her on a couch and stared at her in confusion. Isola and Grek followed him into the lounge, and he waved his other attachés and crewmen away. Grek was muttering to one of his caged insects, edgy and twitching, clicking his beak repeatedly. Isola began rummaging through the walnut-panelled cabinets that lined the room. The lounge was beautifully appointed, like everything else on the shuttle, with plush, deep carpets and a vaulted ceiling decorated with bas-relief images of Terran beasts. But it was poorly stocked compared to a full-size commerce lounge on the Drakestar.
"Combat stims,"
muttered Isola as she rifled through star charts and metal-class books. Drake hunched over Ordus, monitoring her vital functions with his cybernetic eye. Data scrolled over the lens of his monocle, a blizzard of runes and chemical formulae.
"The reaction should not have been this severe. Belosus must have drugged her, and whatever he used must have reacted with a neurotoxin I used to stun her."
Grek gripped his rifle as though he could shoot the drugs out of her system.
"If she dies, I have failed you."
Isola attached a Medicaid device to Ordus's chest, and it began chiming. She shook her head and stared at the cupboards.
"We have nothing left. Nothing for neurotoxins, at least."
"Return to Belosus' ship," said Grek.
"What?" said Isola.
"Find the weapon he used on her. Put it in a cool place. Her wounds will become less inflamed."
Isola looked at Drake with a raised eyebrow. Grek had been making lots of similarly bizarre suggestions since orders started to fade. Then Grek noticed the splinter pistol in Drake's belt.
"Or your weapon."
He stepped towards Drake, reaching out for the gun. Drake gripped the gun's handle, but before he could say anything, the chiming of the Medicaid device became a long, drawn-out whine.
"Thrown,"
muttered Drake, slapping the couch in frustration. Isola rushed over and examined the device on Ordus's chest. She shook her head.
"No pulse."
She crouched next to Drake.
"We should not be found with a dead deserter on a House Drake ship."
Drake shook his head, still staring at the corpse, unable to accept he had let his chance slip through his fingers. "You tried everything," said Isola. "This was not meant to be. It's time for us..."
"It is meant to be."
Greg looked around the lounge.
"It is the Blackstone's plan. Bring her back. Revive her. Restart her heart. You must."
"The Blackstone is a star fort," snapped Drake. He knew it was far more than that. Incredibly vast, partially inhabited, and full of ancient archaeotech for a start. But the Croot's endless mythologizing was grating on him.
"It does not have plans."
Then something Greg said resonated with him.
"Restart."
Drake rocked back onto his feet and stood, staring into the middle distance.
"Restart, restart, restart."
He clicked his fingers, rushed across the room and began flinging open all the cupboards and tossing objects through the air. A bewildering collection of arcana was soon scattered across the floor. Ancient-looking timepieces, plant-stuffed terrariums, gun barrels, fragments of mouldering tapestry, books on etiquette, and display cases full of medals.
"Where is it?"
said Drake, as he emptied a bag of numbered skulls onto the floor.
"What?"
asked Isola, whipping drawers out and emptying them.
"The axial interruptor we took from the caller sector," muttered Drake.
Isola shook her head, frowning at him, still rifling through the piles of objects.
"This," said Drake, emptying a crate of finger bones and holding up a battered old leather strap as if it were a trophy.
It looked like a wide belt, but it was trailing bundles of wires and studded with dials and switches. There were needle-tipped prongs running along its length, and as Drake flicked a switch, the prongs crackled with electric current.
"That's for restarting plasma cells," said Isola, eyeing him warily.
Drake rushed back to the dead pilot on his couch, turned a dial, and flicked the switch again. This time it sparked with such force that fingers of electricity arced between the prongs, burning so brightly that Drake could hardly look at it.
"Wait!"
cried Greg, with more emotion in his voice than Drake had heard before.
"She's already dead," Drake pointed out.
Greg fell quiet and backed away, but Drake hesitated. Dead or not, there was something ungallant about what he was about to do. Then he shook his head. Without orders, he would leave Precipice with nothing. He wrapped the belt around the pilot's wrist, forced the prongs into her veins, fastened the clasps, flicked a switch, and then stepped back. There was a hiss of burning skin, and the smell of cooking meat filled the room. As the device bucked and flickered with electric charge, the seconds stretched out, and Drake pictured himself, as the other two must have seen him, hunched over a corpse, burning a hole in its arm. The whole scene was extremely undignified. He was about to deactivate the strap when Order sat up with a howl, knocking Drake back across the room. He crashed into Isola, and they slammed into one of the cabinets. Order continued howling as she leapt to her feet, smoke trailing from her wrist, her eyes rolling wildly.
"Blosis!"
she cried, grabbing Greg by the throat and slamming him against the wall. Sparks were shimmering across her face and flashing in her mouth until Drake rushed forward and turned the device off. She froze.
"Greg?"
She sounded dazed, her hand still locked around the alien's throat. She let go and looked around at the Commerce Lounge, taking in the subdued hidden lighting and the fearsome hunting trophies mounted on the wall.
"What is this?"
she asked, looking at Drake and Isola.
"Sit down,"
said Drake, taking her by the arm and removing the strap.
"You've just..."
Order shoved him away, nearly falling, then managing to steady herself. She stared at the strap.
"What's going on?"
"Belosis's drugs reacted with a splinter I fired into you," said Drake.
"You were temporarily insensible."
"You shot me?"
"You were attacking me, but my shot should not have had such a serious effect."
Ordus touched the burn marks on her wrist, staring at him.
"You need a drink," said Drake, pouring brandy into a crystal tumbler and offering it to her.
Ordus ignored him. She massaged the stubble on her shaved head and winced. "Why did you break me out of there?" She glared at Grek. "Did you bring him to me? Why?"
Drake waved to the couches, gesturing for everyone to sit.
Isla and Grek took a seat, but Ordus remained standing, swaying slightly and looking warily at the door, as though expecting Belosus to appear with shackles in his hands.
"You need to rest," said Drake.
Ordus glared at him, and there was a moment of awkward silence, broken only by the occasional crackle of sparks flickering across Ordus's jumpsuit.
"I have a proposition," said Drake, sipping the brandy as if nothing untoward had happened. "I am planning another attempt on the Blackstone, and I have a very specific route in mind."
He nodded at Grek.
"Your acquaintance here tells me you are uniquely equipped to advise me."
Ordus looked around the room, seemingly trying to gauge if she was hallucinating or not. Then she strode over to the drinks cabinet and poured herself a shot with a trembling hand.
"You've got the wrong person."
She was still massaging her head and grimacing.
"I'm done with this shitty place. I'm out of here."
She finished her drink and looked at the animal heads that decorated the walls.
"Are you going to show me out of this zoo, or do I need to start breaking things?"
"Where will you go?"
asked Drake, speaking quietly, still sipping his brandy. His augmatic eye hummed as it focused on her face.
"As far from precipice as possible," she said, heading to the door.
"You must have a great deal of sway with the proctors," said Drake.
"Not many people can get off this station, not without giving them a substantial payment. But you are presumably so trusted, they will let you leave for free."
He finished his drink.
"And pay for your place on a ship, too."
"You must have your own pilot," she said, her eyes narrowing.
"What do you need me for?"
"To get through the teeth," said Grek.
Ordus laughed.
"The dragon's teeth?"
Her tone was derisive, but Drake noticed she was no longer looking at the door. Something had sparked in her eyes.
"Tell me how to fly through the dragon's teeth," he said, "and I'll make you so rich you'll have no problems leaving precipice."
Ordus headed back to the drinks cabinet and refilled her glass. Her hand was steadier this time.
"Why risk such a dangerous route? The Blackstone will kill you soon enough. Why hurry the inevitable?"
Drake shrugged.
"I can transfer the credit as soon as I land on the fortress. My survival, or failure to survive, will be of no consequence to you."
She sipped the brandy thoughtfully.
"You're trying to reach the place those priests were babbling about. The obscure vault."
"The Oscurus vault."
"Whatever. Why do you want to go there? Are you one of those babbling devotees?"
She glanced at Grek.
"Like him?"
She raised an eyebrow.
"Does the Blackstone talk to you?"
"I have business there."
Ordus dropped onto the couch, then gasped in pain and placed a hand over her chest. After a while, her grimace faded and she relaxed again.
"No, you're not chasing visions like those other idiots, are you?"
She looked admiringly at the wealth scattered around the room.
"You're chasing something else."
She stroked the brocades that dangled from the arm of the couch.
"I'm not interested in being your employee, Mr...
Captain Drake," said Isola. Ordus glared at her and continued.
"But if you tell me why you're willing to risk so much to reach this vault, I might consider a partnership."
Drake struggled to keep his expression neutral.
"I have important reasons for finding the vault. Important for the wider Imperium, not just for my..."
He cut himself short, shaking his head.
"It doesn't matter why I need to go there. What option do you have but to help me? You're trapped on precipice until a bounty hunter puts you back in a cupboard."
You're deluded if you think you can just fly out of here.
I'll take my chances.
Drake glared at Greg.
Is she really the only pilot who can do this?
I'm the only one, said Ordus.
Drake shook his head.
There was an infuriating lack of naivety in Precipice.
Common and discourteous they might be, but the people here had only reached the Blackstone Fortress because they were shrewd enough to spot every opportunity. Drake felt as though he had landed in a world in which everyone was a little too much like him.
"Show me what you're after," she said. "What's so important that you'd lower yourself to conversing with the likes of me?"
Drake paced around the lounge, muscles rippling across his clenched jaw.
"This is more important than you realise."
Isola shook her head, a warning in her eyes.
"What use will our research be if we have to leave?" said Drake.
He came back to the couch, sat down and looked at Greg.
"I belong to a certain school of thought. It's old-fashioned, perhaps, but I believe that a man's word should mean something. I admit, I doubted you'd find me a pilot, but you've proved me wrong, and I will not renege on my oath. If we manage to land on the Blackstone, you may join my party."
He turned to Ordus.
"Clearly, I am not in the habit of working with deserters."
Ordus's face darkened, and she was about to argue, but before she could speak, Drake held up a hand and continued.
"However, I must weigh up two evils. Associating with a possible criminal, I do not profess to know the veracity of the claims against you, or leaving Precipice without completing the task I set myself, which I believe could have a significant effect on the war against the great enemy. If you are truly able to steer the vanguard past the dragon's teeth, then I will offer you a place on this expedition."
He lowered his voice, speaking very precisely.
"However, if either of you betray the confidence I am placing in you, or reveal the details of our arrangement with any other party, I will consider you enemies of the Imperium and,"
he touched the handle of his rapier,
"deal with you accordingly."
Ordus tried to speak, but he held up his hand again.
"I will need confirmation from you both, in writing, that you have understood the binding nature of our agreement."
Ordus poured herself another drink. She looked at the scrolls and papers Isola had scattered on the floor.
"Rogue traders, how you people love contracts."
She shrugged.
"Whatever, I'll sign. And I'm not greedy. 50% of whatever proceeds this expedition generates."
Drake gave her a bemused smile.
"For flying me in?
For being your partner?"
Drake had to applaud her gall, and the truth was, he doubted there would be any proceeds to split. His plan was to share whatever information he found with the authorities on Terra. His prize would be of another nature. There was, however, a principle at stake.
10% for each of you," he said, holding up a hand as she prepared to reply. "Yanis Drake is not in the habit of haggling. Such an undignified way to approach matters. You may accept my offer or we may part company. It is entirely your prerogative. I feel it is only fair to warn you, however, that your friend Belosas will be waking up around now, and from what I hear, he is not the only intermediary contracted by the Imperial Navy to locate you."
Ordus raised an eyebrow and nodded, looking at Isola.
10%. You heard the man.
Isola was pale with anger, but she nodded to the auto quill in the corner of the room. It trundled across the room and spat vellum from its chest.
Standard terms, said Isola, her voice brittle and icy.
The servitor's bundle of digits rattled over the scrolls, inking them with script and stamping them with juicy gobbets of hot wax. Isola snatched them up, pored over the clauses, and handed them to Drake. Drake took a quill from the machine and signed the contract without looking at the text, then handed them to Greg and Ordus. Greg seemed unsure what to do, but finally scratched a symbol and handed a copy back to Isola. Ordus took longer, staring at the text and sneering. Then she signed and gave a copy to Isola, stashing the other one in a deep pocket. Drake nodded to Isola.
Show them.
She hesitated.
Isola, said Drake, your captain has just given you an order.
They both knew their relationship was subtler than captain and subordinate, but Isola could not defy such a blatant command. She cleared the table, placing the books and papers on the floor, then ran her finger over a rune engraved in the glass. The lights in the chamber died as a hololith leapt from the table. A spiral of loops and nodes, like a genetic helix made of shimmering static-slash-light, hovering a foot above the glass. It rotated slowly, and the light waxed and waned, washing over the faces of Drake and the others as they leant closer. Drake was still holding the strap he had used to revive Ordus, and he pointed it at some of the intersections.
Linear motors, crystalline chambers that cross the whole Blackstone Fortress. The precipice locals call them maglevs. If you've been on the Blackstone, then you will have used one of these to reach your destination. Their design is baffling, obviously. They employ a form of magnetic propulsion to hurl transport chambers along ever-changing routes.
As Drake pointed at the various loops, they flowed and reformed constantly, creating new, increasingly complex variations.
We can navigate them to a certain extent. The controls are easy enough to decipher, but the trips are always one way and often not where you intended.
Pretty, said Ordus, tracing her finger over the projection.
Lethal, said Drake.
Ordus nodded.
They're random. They spit you out wherever they like.
They do not like or dislike, said Drake, irritated by the suggestion of a personality. But they're certainly unpredictable. If you find a location that holds a clue to the fortress's past or its workings, you can rest assured you'll never get there again. All these expeditions and deaths, and we're still no closer to understanding the Blackstone.
Ordus narrowed her eyes.
It's a treasure trove. Relics. Pieces of archaeotech. What else do you need to know?
She was watching Drake closely.
Those boars in the helmsman lack ambition, he said. They're happy to risk everything for a few fragments of alien weaponry, he stared back at her. But it was not avarice that brought me to the western reaches, he waved at the finery surrounding them. House Drake is not in need of funds, he shrugged.
I admit, Isola and I have accumulated some intriguing finds. When we first set off from Precipice, we followed the same routes as every other wide-eyed adventurer.
He nodded to the rows of heads mounted on the walls.
They were as eclectic a mix as creatures heaped in Belosus's hold, leering, monstrous horrors of every size and form.
I've hunted species on the Blackstone that I have never seen mentioned in any scientific texts, and the Drake archives are extensive.
He waved through an archway to a companionway lined with cargo crates.
And you're right. We have discovered technology so ancient and peculiar that a single piece could occupy an adept of the cult Mechanicus for decades.
He shook his head as he considered everything they had seen.
The Blackstone is unique. One could trawl its depths for a lifetime and barely glimpse a fraction of its mysteries. A brave man could certainly make himself rich in there.
But you want more.
I want control, he said, as the hololith flashed in his eye. I want to claim it. Think what that would mean for the Imperium. Power beyond anything in our arsenal. If I could hand that to Terra, they could turn it on the great enemy.
Drake's words became more impassioned as he tapped a book on the table, a crumbling, gilt-edged relic called Ravensburg's Treatise on the Gothic War.
From what I can gather, the Imperial Navy have harnessed similar star forts in the past with incredible results. I intend to give them the means to control this one.
And the Ascurus Vault?
Asked Ordus.
Drake pointed at the nodes in the hololith.
Every one of these points is linked. I tracked signals from everyone we found, and they all look towards the Ascurus Vault.
It acts almost like the Astronomicon, guiding the transport chambers through the fortress. You don't know that for sure. Isola can show you our calculations. There's no question that the chambers link to the vault, every single one we encountered. Ordus was nodding. So, if you could reach the vault, you might find a way to control the movements of the other chambers. You might make the place less of an impenetrable labyrinth, make it easier to navigate.
Perhaps. And perhaps, if the Ascurus Vault is the nexus of the transportation chambers, it might control other things. It may be the command bridge of the whole space station.
Ordus laughed.
You think you're going to fly that thing to Terra?
All I know is that the Ascurus Vault is the obstacle that had stymied every attempt to understand the fortress.
And the dragon's teeth? Asked Ordus. Why there? Why that particular docking point?
We have roughly located the vault, based on the signals we tracked from the other chambers, and the only way to get close is through the dragon's teeth.
Even then we may be sent off track by this, said Isola, nodding to the shifting spiral of roots in the hololith.
The dragon's teeth will place us very close to the vault, said Drake. We will have a good chance of reaching it before we become lost.
Ordus laughed again.
I've never heard so many ifs, buts and maybes. You're as insane as Taddeus.
Taddeus?
The last lunatic who tried.
Oh, the priest. Drake shook his head, remembering who Grek and Ordus had travelled with last time.
This is no holy crusade.
Then what is it? What are you chasing?
Ordus leant across the table, bathing her shaven skull in glowing vectors. She was studying Drake with renewed interest.
You say you're not as desperate as all the other wretches in Precipice. So what's driving you to take such risks?
I have just explained what success could mean for the Imperium.
No, it's more than that. I can see it in your face. This is personal. What does success mean for you?
Isola snapped off the hololith and the lights rose again.
The captain has told you everything you need to know. You have signed the contract. How soon can you be ready to leave?
We'll need Taddeus, said Ordus.
I can get you past the dragon's teeth, but you'll be dead 10 minutes later, unless you take the priest.
This is not a Minastorum crusade, said Drake. Why is a priest so essential?
Look, said Ordus. You can't imagine how happy I'd be never to see Taddeus again. Even by the standards of this place, he's repulsive. I've had my fill of violent prophecies and bloody visions, but Taddeus knows things. When we tried to reach the vault last time, he knew every turn of the route.
She looked irritated by the admission.
Something was leading him. I'm not saying it was spiritual or that the God Emperor was really talking to him, but he definitely knew where to go.
Your mission failed, said Isola.
She looked at Grek.
That's what you said, didn't you? The priests failed to find the vault.
The humans.
Grek looked at Ordus and hesitated.
The humans became confused.
Insane, said Ordus.
Tell them the truth, Grek. We went insane. We all did. When I saw...
Her words trailed off and she looked awkward, shaking her head.
The Blackstone is more than nodes and chambers.
Is that why you ended up in the Skeens? Asked Drake.
She shook her head, then nodded, then shrugged.
I can't remember how I ended up in the Skeens. I'm not even sure how we got off the fortress.
She looked at Grek.
But you're unchanged. And you seemed unchanged then.
He twitched his head, causing his quills to rattle.
I am not like you.
Drake topped up Ordus's glass.
How did the fortress affect you? What did you see?
She stared into the drink.
The past.
It was clear she did not want to elaborate. Grek nodded.
To reach the vault, you need the priest.
Drake hesitated. He needed to claim the Blackstone in the name of House Drake,
not presented to some deranged ministerium zealot who would seize it for the ecclesiarchy. What does he want with the vault?
He doesn't want the vault, said Greg. He wants something hidden there, a holy relic.
Drake nodded, pleased. It sounded as though the priest could lead the way to the vault, take whatever relics he liked, and leave Drake to claim the real prize. Isola leant over to him. Even if the priest can reach the vault, he won't be able to protect you from the madness orders just described. Drake stood and began pacing around the room. He waved the axial interrupter vaguely in the air as he circled the couches.
Think, Isola. Our new colleagues are both prepared to risk their lives by going back through the dragon's teeth, as long as we have this priest Thaddeus in our party. Why would they do that if Thaddeus does not really have some way of navigating the fortress?
Captain, said Isola,
you never struck me as a follower of holy men.
He gave her a wry smile. He's an adeptus ministerium preacher, and I am as devout as you are, Isola. We must all be grateful we have the light of the ministerium to lead us in such dark times. His tone became more serious. And, if I heard our pilot correctly, this Thaddeus had almost reached the Oscurus vault when they were forced to turn back.
He stopped before Isola.
Almost reached it, Isola. Do you see? Whether it was faith that got him there, or some secret he didn't share with the others, he clearly knows something. The pieces are falling together.
He nodded at Ordus.
We have a pilot who can fly us to the correct docking point. He looked at Grek with a slight bow. And a fighter who has sworn to keep me alive. And now a priest who can lead us to the vault itself until we are...
Until we're so insane we can't go any further,
interrupted Isola, looking at Ordus. Is that right? Ordus sank back into the couch, massaging her wrist, wincing at the burn marks. She nodded.
It's a fair point. How can we shield ourselves from madness?
Are you insane now? Said Drake. Ordus laughed.
Oh, well, that's a matter of perspective.
She shrugged.
The confusion I felt on the Blackstone has gone.
It was specifically linked to the fortress. It only affected you on the Blackstone.
I suppose so, yes. In fact, we were all fine until Thaddeus said we were near the vault.
Then it's a localised effect, not true mental illness. The Blackstone was projecting thoughts into your minds, protecting the vault. We need a psychic shield. There must be someone in this place who can help us.
His words trailed off. He turned to Isola with a triumphant expression.
What? She asked. Do you still have Corval's card?
Corval?
The Terran noble, the man we met in the Helmsman.
She took it from her pocket and looked at it, still frowning.
Look at the family crest, said Drake.
She shrugged, then nodded, comprehension dawning in her eyes.
What is it? Snapped Ordus, reaching over and snatching the card.
House Corval, said Drake. It's a navigator house.
So?
Isola managed to keep her expression as flat and impassive as ever, but Drake noticed how eagerly she took the card back.
Psychers, she said.
Drake nodded.
If the Blackstone projected madness into your minds, then House Corval may be able to help. The Navigator houses have ways to shield their minds from the dangers of the warp.
But we're not talking about the warp, said Ordus.
They know how to protect minds, said Drake.
He took the card from Isola.
Isola shook her head.
You're not thinking straight, Captain. We don't even know this Corval. You're risking so much.
She glanced at the others, clearly uncomfortable having to talk in front of them.
I know what this means to you, but we don't know any of these people.
She placed a hand on his arm.
Can I talk to you alone, Captain?
Drake shrugged off her grip, smoothed down his uniform, and took a deep breath.
No one in the room, not even Isola, could understand what this meant to him. Corval is clearly a man of refined character, and I would hope he recognised the same in me. I'm sure he'll be willing to offer advice. Isola was about to protest again when he glared at her. Ready the remaining men, Isola. Grek and Ordus will take me to Tedius. He frowned, looking at Grek. Do you know where to find the priest? Grek nodded.
He's not allowed to move his ship. The proctors won't let him leave.
Of course not, laughed Ordus. If Tedius leaves here raving about visions and relics, every ship on the Western Fringe will come looking. The proctors are already worried they're losing control of the place. Where is he? Asked Drake.
An ecclesiarchy barge, said Grek. The Clarion, moored to Ilium Gate.
Good, said Drake. And the Corval vessel is moored to the Selsum Gate. He turned to Isola. I'll go with these two to the priest, and, assuming that meeting goes well, I will then ask Corval's advice on the madness that Ordus described. Isola saluted, but hesitated at the doorway, looking back at him. Drake held her gaze, making it clear that the time for discussion had passed. She nodded and left, crying out commands as she marched down the companionway towards the stern of the ship, flanked by a scrum of rattling servitors. Ordus had stood up, and Drake looked at his new companions. Grek had the crude-looking rifle he took from Belosus's ship, but Ordus was unarmed. He strode into the next room and grabbed a las pistol, handing it to her as he walked back into the lounge. She stumbled back as she took it, and Drake noticed how terrible she looked, bruised, gaunt and pale, and still wincing every time she touched her chest.
"Forgive my manners," he said. "This wretched place lowers one's standards. You need to eat and rest."
He called Isola back in.
"Ordus will remain here. See if there's anything edible left in the galley, and make sure she has some rest."
He grabbed a bottle from one of the cabinets, the syrupy amber contents flashing as he handed it to Ordus.
"This Amasek is reasonable. Better than the vinegar Gatto sells, at least."
He patted down his dress coat, checking his pistol and rapier were in place and that his uniform was uncreased.
"We'll return within the hour."